Imagine a world where innovation knows no bounds. At BAE Systems Fast Labs, we're pioneering advanced technology and defense research, shaping the future of safety and security. Explore our website to uncover a realm of cutting-edge projects, collaborations, and visionary thinkers. Whether you're a tech enthusiast, a defender of freedom, or just curious, Fast Labs is where groundbreaking solutions are born. Join us and be part of the future today. Visit www.baesystems.com/fastlabs. Welcome to From the Crow's Nest, a podcast on electromagnetic spectrum operations, or EMSO. I'm your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows. You can follow me on Twitter at FTCNHost. Thank you for listening. In this episode, we go back to AOC Europe, which was held in Bonn, Germany on May 15th to 17th. Now, as many of you know, while I was there, I live streamed episodes and special segments each day using Twitter Spaces. This is the first time we did this. It was a great opportunity and a great chance to talk to people at the show. A few awkward pauses and moments since it was the inaugural effort, but overall it was a great success. We had some great guests and co-hosts during the week, some interesting discussions and some fun talking to exhibitors and attendees. So I wanted to take some highlights from day one at the show and bring them to you. On the first day of AOC Europe, I welcomed John Knowles, editor-in-chief of AOC's Journal of Electromagnetic Dominance, a military fiction author and EW expert, retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Jeffrey Fisher, AOC President Brian Hinckley, and retired U.S. Marine Corps Colonel Mark Magrum, who is now the president of Atkinson Aeronautics and Technology. We will bring you cut-ups of the other days and segments to you throughout the summer, but in the meantime, enjoy this look into AOC Europe 2023. Let's listen in.
Well, welcome to From the Crow's Nest, live from AOC Europe. I am your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows. This is the inaugural live stream effort of our podcast, and I am pleased to be here with a great crew of co-hosts and speakers for the week. So welcome, everyone, and glad that you could join us. So this is day one of AOC Europe. So today's show is going to be more about introduction of AOC Europe and the theme of multi-domain operations, and kind of what are some of the questions that we need to be asking, and what do we expect to hear? So great show ahead. So just to get started, I wanted to bring Colonel Jeff Fisher and John Knowles up to speaking, and just wanted to start with a very basic question. Okay, so and Colonel Fisher, you're here. Jeff, you're here at AOC Europe. John, you are back home on the East Coast, unable to be here, but certainly the current issue of the JED that we're circulating here talks a lot about self-protection and that how European Defense Agency is focusing on that capability. So just as a real general question to get started, what are your thoughts heading into AOC Europe, and what do you think in term you would like to hear or about multi-domain operations coming from this audience here today? And I'll turn it over to Jeff first.
Yeah. So, hey, thanks for hosting this. This is actually really, really awesome. I'm out here on the floor right now in front of the MBDA booth, and it's actually really impressive. There's a lot of people that have a lot of the booths have tons of mockups. It's really cool. I'm looking at a couple Meteor missiles. I'm looking at a Spear and a Spear EW mockup pod sitting out in front of me. And I'm impressed just in my first 2 minutes, and it's not even open yet. I snuck in and started walking around, and everyone's looking at me actually pretty funny because I'm talking into my phone and they don't know why I'm doing it just yet. So I know this is a first do on Twitter Spaces. We're gonna get some of the folks in the booths here to actually join in and talk to us. But Ken, back to your question, right? What do we want to do? I think when we talk about electronic warfare and we talk about AOC in Europe and we look at European nations in general, and for the listeners who out there who might not know me, although I'm retired, I live in Austria, I live in Europe. I'm very, very familiar with European defense situations. A lot of nations are actually starting to invest. They're investing heavily in their defense. There's a lot of the world is an uncertain place, especially with what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. And so a lot of the defense budgets are picking up, and people, I think a lot of nations don't just want to buy the traditional, you know, tanks and artillery and stuff like that. They're looking at what are some of the systems that are working really, really well in Ukraine. And I think we're going to have that. It's going to be some interesting talks in the conference, right?
And that's what that's the main topic of John Knoll's article, latest edition of the Journal of Electromagnetic Dominance, is how the European Defense Agency is focusing on self-protection. And you're seeing a lot more, you're seeing an increase in funding across the board in countries. And they're really kind of trying to figure out a way to expedite collaborative programs. And so, you know, bringing John in, you know, do you have anything you wanted to add to what Jeff was saying?
Yeah, Jeff is super insightful on this, and it's practiced EW for longer than most of us have. I don't know how to say it nicely. Longer than most of us have been alive. Sorry, Jeff. No. The questions I always think about. It's interesting to go when you talk about interoperability and integration, because everybody wants to just jump in and think that their systems are going to collaborate and work together. And they think what NATO's always done a really good job of is understanding what are the preconditions for coalition operations. And when you get into EMSO, that gets very complex. And that's, I think, one of the big questions I always ask is, you know, you see a lot of systems out there, you see a lot of capability, but you really have to ask the question, how is that set up to work? You know, if it's a French system or Italian or Spanish, how is that set up? What structures are in place to allow that system to be interoperable, or, you know, in some way work together with other systems from other countries? And that's not an easy thing, partly because of the way we've built our EW, largely in stovepipes, but also just even like in a coalition, there's so much evolving technology coming together, and there's legacy and new and things like that. So it's a very complex question. I always am amazed that we've achieved what we've achieved so far.
So Eric Bamford, AOC board director, has a question. Eric, do you want to speak up?
Yeah. So one of the things that goes to what John just talks about, the interoperability piece, that goes back to a podcast we had from the AOC in October last year. On standardization and getting common standards as to how we integrate and how we approach things. So that is the kind of key workaround to get things to work together in a hostile environment. And that has to be fixed now while we're still not at war.
Thanks, Eric. And so, Jeff, I've had you on From the Crow's Nest for a couple times. Given your expertise in what's going on in Ukraine, how have you seen NATO interoperability evolve over the last year?
So that's a great question, and it's actually really, really timely, right? Because there was an article that came out with General Cavoli, right, who is the current, you know, EUCOM commander, but also the Supreme Allied Commander of European forces. So he's in charge of all of that. And he just put out, a speaking point, and it's really interesting. He, for the first time in NATO, actually has a comprehensive operation plan moving forward on what each nation should contribute and what they've all agreed to contribute to this comprehensive security construct of Europe, which, you know, up until now hasn't happened. And it's not a slight on the previous EUCOM commanders. I think it has more to do with the fact that Ukraine has created this unstable an uncertain security space in Europe, and many nations have taken note of that.
Well, thanks, Jeff. So I wanted to touch a little bit, you know, directly on the theme of the show here, which is you know, achieving multi-domain operations. And when we talk about that, you know, it seems like a simple, common term, but obviously, you know, I had John Knowles on the podcast on my last edition of the podcast, and we were talking about the language difference that happens between U.S. and Europe and other regions. And so, you know, in talking about achieving multi-domain operation in the context of coalitions, you know, there's a lot of different terminology we use. So, John, you know, what do we mean when we talk about integration, and at what levels are we trying to focus that work on integration on?
Yeah. So it's important to define terms, right? Not only is there multiple languages involved, it's just the concepts are constantly evolving. So we have to be really good about defining what we mean by it and, you know, figuring that out across, you know, 30 nations, if you're talking about NATO. But, you know, there's integration, there's interoperability, there's connectivity, there's different aspects of it, different layers or levels, so to speak. And, you know, at the end of the day, it has to be operational integration. I think you really need to, you know, you need to have that. That's what you're aiming for, is everybody being able to fight together. In that sense, you know, one of the things that underpins that is, you know, at the system level, weapon system level, in the sensors and effectors on those weapon systems, you need that interoperability. And so, I always say it looks easy in a brochure. It's really hard in practice.
So, you know, we're talking about achieving multi-domain operations in coalition warfare as it pertains to electromagnetic spectrum operations. And it's always been the case that I've made on our From the Crow's Nest podcast. So really, if you look at, you know, EMS superiority, electromagnetic spectrum superiority, is really the backbone of everything we want to achieve in multi-domain operations. Easy thing to say, hard thing to achieve. And so when we talk multi-domain operations, what is your perspective of where MSO fits? Is it the backbone? Is it glue? I mean, there's a lot of different terminology or images that we use to describe that. What are your thoughts on where MSO fits into the multi-domain operations conversation? Jeff, I'll start with you.
So here's the thing, right? I've always been an electromagnetic spectrum advocate, right? I believe that it's a domain. I believe that it has its right place. As a matter of fact, if you ever knew Major/Lieutenant Colonel Fisher way back in the day, and John Knowles knows this, he gave me my breakout chance, right? So I wrote a op-ed for JET back in 2011, September, that said it was talking about the EMS domain. And John liked the article so much, he put it on the cover. I didn't have to pay him. All right, he did it on his own. I don't know who bribed him, but it's the first time that I've ever gotten a cover in an op-ed. And so
it was all merit.
it was really, really, I'm still grateful to that. I don't know if John knows this, but my mom actually framed every single page of that article, and it's in this massive, frame. Every single time I moved in the military since the movers hated me, which is quite funny, but it's framed. So thanks, Mom. Anyway, back to the issue, right? So I do believe that the electronic spectrum is important. I do believe it's a domain, but just because it's a domain, I don't argue that it's the most important domain, right? And I won't argue that any domain is the most important domain. I believe air, land, sea, space, cyber, the EMS, all these domains need to work together, and we need to start talking in terms of multi-domain operations, right? We need to have this. Everything works together, and what's unique is, and I'm gonna put cyber aside for just a second. But when we talk about the electronic spectrum, right, it's the one domain that you really can't see, right? It's the one domain you can't see, taste, or touch. But we all know it's there. If you get a spec analyzer and you look, you can see the signals hopping around up and down, and it's really, really cool. In my personal opinion, it is the glue, right? It is the domain that's the glue that holds all the others together, right? It's the one that connects the air to the land to the sea to the air. It is the one that uses not only by communications, but right by digital data link and RF energy and without the electronic spectrum, without being able to master the electronic spectrum, without being able to master command and control through wireless means, you as a military have a serious disadvantage in the battle space. And I this is one of the key things I'm going to talk about on Wednesday during my lecture on key lessons learned from Ukraine, right? Russia failed miserably, especially at the beginning of the war, on mastering the electronic spectrum, on being, they may have had some good technology, and that's still open for debate, right? There's probably some foreign military exploitation going on, some of this stuff that's been captured, but we'd always believe that they had good systems, that they had good radars, they had good S-300s, they had good S-400s, they had good jamming systems. Where did it break down, right? Did the intel get it wrong? Was there a lack of training? Was there an issue where that they just didn't actually truly dedicate themselves across what we call the .MIL-PF construct to employ these systems? I don't know. Time will tell.
Yeah, I think Jeff is on to that. I think he mentioned something that always strikes a chord with me. And again, he's right about, it's going to be a long time parsing through a lot of information before we really get a definitive view of what happened in the first year of the war with Ukraine from a Russian perspective. But I think one of the things that I always think about, getting into the idea of integration is training. I don't know how the Russians trained, but I know when you're adding mission areas or expanding mission areas for coalitions like NATO, for alliances, when you add things like airborne electronic attack or expand that, the training requirement is massive. It's huge. And especially in a place like Europe, where if you're trying to operate or train against a S-400, for example, and it's got a 400-kilometer range, you are very limited in the places you can go to practice, multi-ship tactics against an integrated air defense system with those capabilities. But I look at Russia in their invasion, and I think it just seemed on the surface very uncoordinated, very poorly. They literally weren't interoperable groups.
Well, thanks, John.
Hello, everyone. I want to take a short break to thank BAE Systems Fast Labs for the continued support for our From the Crow's Nest podcast. I am pleased to be here today with Bill Watson, Chief Scientist at BAE Systems Fast Labs. Bill, it's great to be here with you. Now, BAE Systems Fast Labs is BAE Systems Research and Development and Production Organization. Can you tell us a little bit about Fast Labs as well as your background?
Yes, and thank you for having me. BAE Systems Fast Labs is dedicated to innovating disruptive next-generation solutions for the critical defense and intelligence challenges. Of course, electronic warfare is one of our key focus areas, but in addition to that, we also do research in autonomy and AI, sensing and response, advanced microelectronics, communications, and navigation. I've been working in the RF, that is radio frequency research community, for over 20 years, a short time in the United States Air Force, followed by specific research and development. My work in the last 20 years has been singularly focused on DARPA research, and within the last 10 years at BAE Systems Fast Lab specifically. Technology we work on spans sensor processing to high-level sense-making, up to tactical and operational level autonomy and decision-making support. And one of the key differentiators about BAE Fast Labs is the research that we do is intended to find its way to benefit the warfighter.
This has been an important topic through many of our recent episodes here on From the Crow's Nest. Can you talk a little bit more about that technology? And for our audience, how does it change or affect our EW capabilities that we're trying to field?
In our work with leading DoD customers like DARPA or AFRL, we focus on developing technologies that will advance future solutions, from overcoming today's challenges to developing technologies never before thought to be possible. We then transition our technology to fieldable products to benefit our warfighters through partnership with BAE Systems Electronic Systems product lines. As a specific example, I thought I'd use a movie you may or may not be familiar with. It was called Battle Los Angeles. It was from 2011. And in that movie, aliens had invaded. And what the characters in the movie found is that whenever they keyed their microphones on their radios, they could be easily geolocated and targeted. What the movie presented as science fiction for us is, in fact, science fact. This is the type of technology that we work on and exist today, where the physics meets the real world.
This sounds like absolutely fascinating work. What is the next area that you see for research and development? And if anyone is interested in learning more, how can they reach out to you?
Well, we can't say too much because of the sensitivity of our work, classification levels. But in Fast Labs, we are always working on the future state. No matter what the future threats are, we will continue to focus on solving the hardest problems to benefit the warfighter. If you're interested in more information about Fast Labs, you can connect with us on our website at basystems.com/fastlabs.
Well, thank you, Bill, for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest. And now it's time to get back to our show.
Right now, I am standing next to AOC President Brian Hinckley. He is also here representing, of course, our association here at AOC Europe. Brian, welcome to From the Crow's Nest. Once again, we had you back on in the fall, right before you took your office as president, and now you're here at AOC Europe. Tell me what's going on in your mind as you're walking through the exhibit floor here today.
So, Ken, it's great to be here. It's exciting, and we're all looking forward to the networking. You know, it's something that AOC brings. We are dedicated through our members, as you know, and it's all about the members, and it's all about, we do some advocacy. We certainly provide a lot of things like this podcast to strengthen our members, to provide some education. But one of the best parts is this is a community of EW experts for EW experts, and we love to get together. So I think there's a lot of people here that might not yet be members that I think will be members by the time the conference is over.
So before I brought you on, I was having a conversation with Colonel Fisher and John Knowles about the role that EMSO plays when we talk about multi-domain operations. And I've made a point on the show that it's really the backbone of what we do. Do you have any comments on what you expect to hear about the role that EMSO plays in achieving multi-domain operations here this week?
When you talk about EMSO and you talk about the EMS, certainly you if you're not talking about electronic warfare, you're not talking about multi-domain operations. So our ability to be able to connect, our ability to be able to ensure connectivity, whether you use a lexicon like EMSO or whether you use a lexicon for JADC2 or, you know, it's the ability for our forces to be able to use and to be able to maneuver in that electromagnetic battle space with impunity and to use it when we need to use it and to deny it to our adversaries when we need to deny, degrade, delay to those forces.
When we talk traditionally about EW, a lot of times it goes right to airborne electronic attack, but that's only a small slice and becoming an increasingly smaller slice of the EMS, EMSO conversation, and it includes SIGINT, and it includes intelligence collection and analysis and a whole range of other capabilities. Talk a little bit about when we, you know, it's multi-capability integration as well. Any thoughts on that matter?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I would also throw in directed energy there, right? I mean, you've got EMP, you've got directed energy weapons. There's a lot of crazy terms out there that people choose to use or people move on to new terms. But it's non-kinetic. These are non-kinetic effects. It's non-kinetic warfare. The key is truly bringing weapons, systems, and personnel together that understand how physics is physics, and they understand how to maneuver within the electromagnetic spectrum battle space. You know, whether or not it's a domain, I mean, domain, quite honestly, has become a political funding word. So I would argue that maybe the only reason that it's not a domain is probably because it would require that it be given specific funding. And that probably got in the way, because yeah, you could certainly argue that it is its own domain.
Thank you, Brian. Colonel Fisher, John, Eric, any of the speakers that we have, do you have any comments to what you heard from Brian Hinckley?
I'll jump in. The domain discussion has been pretty important to Jed and to the AOC community for a long time. I'm a domain advocate. Not because of the real politic of it, in terms of funding, Ken, you and I have talked about this for, 25 plus years. The EW, the pattern in the EW, industry and in the EW just community has been a roller coaster of attention and funding and solving problems. And then you go down the downslope and it's ignored and allowed to atrophy. And then we get into a conflict and we have to spend our time building it back up, figuring out the next threat. And that was okay back in the day when the EMS wasn't a strategic maneuver space in the in the conflict, and I would say the days of Vietnam, times like that. But today, the EMS is a strategic maneuver space. Controlling it through EW is strategic, and you can't play a fund it and starve it pattern. You can't manage it that way. No country can do that. And so I feel that if domain status helps to smooth out the hills and valleys of the attention and the funding, then that is a good thing. It depends on who you ask. If you ask the warfighter, I think they'll usually tell you it's domain, and they need to strategic maneuver space, and they have operational responsibility for controlling it and using it and managing it. And that's pretty critical. If you ask the services, because they think in sort of, they don't think about operational responsibility so much as train, man, and equip, they tend to think about it as a resource issue. And they would like it to be a simpler world where they don't have to deal with another domain. So I still think it's important for us to make that point that it is a strategic maneuver space. It is something you can't win without it. You need to control it and be able to use it when any fighting force today has to do that, and in order to win and to be successful in operations. So that would just be my one. And it's not a disagreement with Hanks. He's just being realistic about it.
Well, and I think, you know, that's the key thing about the AOC is, you know, there is a difference of understanding on how we define things throughout the association. That's what happens when you have an international association, even within country, because you're dealing with so many, dealing with different services, different domains, different capabilities. And this is an association that has a lot of difference of opinion. That's what makes advocacy on my end such a hard thing, because I always say, you know, one third will agree with you, one third will disagree with you, and one third won't care because it's not in their ballpark. So appreciate that. At this time, I'd like to bring on my next guest. He is a longtime friend, retired U.S. Marine Corps Colonel Mark Magram, call sign Mags. He is the president of Atkinson Aeronautics and Technology and a retired EA-6B pilot from the Marine Corps. And I wanted to bring him on because he's involved in some really interesting efforts on EW and EMSO training, and as well as improving live virtual constructive world of capability. So with that, I'd like to welcome Mag from the Crow's Nest here live at ASP.
Hey, thanks, Ken.
So we had a conversation a couple weeks ago. I was down in San Antonio, met with you at your office. It was a great opportunity to sit down and talk with you a little bit more in-depthly about what Atkinson Aeronautics is involved in. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you want to accomplish coming here to AOC Europe with as it involves training.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, historically, Ken, Atkinson has been kind of involved in the NAVAIR, electronic warfare, electromagnetic spectrum operations space, just kind of being involved in program management. A few years back, maybe a year pre-COVID, we were offered the opportunity to take on an FMS training in San Antonio, where I live, teaching the Royal Saudi Air Force kind of a master's level EW program. And it's a multi-year master's level program kind of designed at taking not pilots and not EWs, but basically electrical engineers with a few software engineers sprinkled in, and teaching them the basics all the way out to some advanced level concepts. And what we did was we took that opportunity and we kind of branched out into some other efforts at international and U.S.-based EMSO training. And so we've got, clearly we're not offering, or we're happy to offer a multi-year program, but we recognize most countries and most organizations are not interested in that. So we've pared it down to 1-3 week courses that we can offer either as a mobile training team or on site at San Antonio. Now, as part of that, I know you guys have been talking some Ukraine stuff. And I would say as part of that, we took on working with a software called MACE, Modern Air Combat Environment, which is a really fantastic EW software tool. We don't make it. A company called BSI, Battlefield Simulation Incorporated, makes it. But we are now, after having used it, we're kind of partnered with them. We provide some of their training when they sell licenses. But we also kind of embraced it and looked at what else it could do other than just a training tool. And some of that is to basically incorporate it with a software-defined radio, which is what I talked a little bit with you about in San Antonio. So we're calling that our ADRS system, all domain replication system. And what we've got is taking the Mace software, basically writing a software program to integrate it into a software-defined radio. We don't make either of those systems, but we're the integrator. And what we think we found is kind of a low-cost solution in the live virtual constructive environment, which, you know, it's been a buzzword since I was active duty many years ago. So the idea is right now we've got a number of use cases that we're developing. One is with the NATO Tactical Leadership Program, TLP, in Albacete, Spain. They've embraced that MACE model. They've got like 38 licenses, and it's kind of a showroom for BSI in its capabilities, but they're really not using it or could be using it to a more full potential.
I wanted to ask you, you know, specifically about that, because one of the advantages that I think that coalition forces have, along with in support of Ukraine, was training and the readiness. And we've talked in the past about this idea of, you know, democratizing decision making and seeing those elements play out in the battlefield. All that has to do with training and making sure that we're ready. That really provided an advantage early on in the war in Ukraine. You know, could you talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of the training piece, and how do you train across coalition forces when, when you have a number of different services and as well as countries participating in the fight with different standards coming in? I mean, and that's really kind of what you're trying to get to with live virtual constructive training and so forth. But could you talk a little bit about the importance of that in coalition warfare?
Sure. And let me start by saying I've veered myself off track there, but we did provide, the folks at BSI were kind enough to offer up several, I believe, 10 or 11 free licenses to the country of Ukraine in their efforts. And it's not just the training software. It can be, it's the Air Force's program of record for JTAC training. And it's a multifaceted software. Likewise, it's used down in SOCOM for mission rehearsal, mission planning, sorry. For some of their forces. And so with that offering to Ukraine, we sent two of our MACE instructors to Ukraine back in, I believe it was late January, for a week of training with their forces. So those guys have that system, have that software integrated and are using it. And we were sure proud to participate that and happy to try and help them along. As far as, you know, coalition EW training, yeah, and I had some of that back when in my active duty days and at the Juke when guys like Judge Bork and I and others were working on joint EW training courseware. So you want to try and speak one language. You want to try and convey, across the spectrum. Not to make light of it, but you want to try and all operate from the same sheet of music. And I think to some degree we've gotten there. I certainly still recognize that certain countries approach EMSO differently, but I think overall the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, and a lot of the coalition efforts have kind of gelled EW efforts to a point where I think we can all work with one another. I don't know if I think Andy East is up.
Yeah. Andrew, welcome to From the Crow's Nest here live at AOC Europe.
I appreciate you having us today. Thank you.
So Andrew East, call sign Mongo. Mongo and I go back to the early 90s flying together and serving together. He's a Marine EA-6B ECMO. So my apologies, you had the pilot speak first. You should have had the smart guy here with Mongo. But he's kind of the architect on the ADRS system we're working. And he's also still actively engaged. He supports Point Magoo in their Marine Air Ground Task Force electronic warfare efforts. And then he's also our Vice President of International Sales with Atkinson. So with that, Mongo, I'll turn it over to you.
Hey, thanks, Mags. And Ken, appreciate you having us today. I'll just cover down a little bit on what Mags talked about with the Adder system that we're trying to put together. And really, this is a culmination of multiple different requests we've had and gaps that we've seen out in the industry. So it kind of started with what Mags talked about with the Marine Corps looking for a more congested and contested environment to train in. If you've been following Ukraine, the issues over there the last year, you can see that EW has taken a forefront, electromagnetic spectrum operations has taken a forefront into what's going on over there. And in the past, as we all know, being in the EW world, that after conflicts, the funding for EW capabilities tends to dip severely until the next crisis kicks off, and then they find it important again and start funding again. We haven't necessarily seen that in the last few years. The importance, as we've seen with the spectrum strategy, dominance strategy, and everything else that's come out from DOD and the services, has recognized that spectrum information is a key component to winning the next battle. With that, the Marine Corps requested a ability to have a more realistic, congested, contested environment. We, as Mags talked about, don't necessarily build the hardware, but we have the links into the folks that do build hardware, and we have the subject matter expertise to provide that capability to the organizations. So what we did is we worked with a hardware vendor to find a moderately cost solution to their problem, and taking a software-defined radio and custom waveforms, we're able to replicate spectrum, both background spectrum and then signals of interest for the Marine Corps to take a look at and work through the problem with their units as they come through 29 Palms to do their large force exercises in preparation for deployments. That then expanded into, we had a request, as Mags talked about, from TLP in Spain, Tactical Leadership Program, because they're using MACE, and they have a disjointed capability there in which they use MACE as a modeling and sim tool to do some planning and some understanding of missions. And then they have a live fly exercise in which they bring in hardware and they run it on the range. But they wanted the ability to merge the two. Can I merge the physical domain with the simulated synthetic domain? And they asked us if it was if we were able to do that. We took a HAC-RF, just a small SDR, and incorporated it into MACE to show that we could command and control and visualize it from MACE. And that sparked their interest. And so now, as Max talked about, we're on a journey to, at the end of June, to go over there and provide a threat replication system.
So yeah, I just wanted to interject, you know, so we were talking earlier on the show about how, you know, the defense, European defense agencies across Europe are really starting to spend more on MSO capabilities, especially obviously in response to the war in Ukraine. How have you seen the European market evolve as it pertains to really this interest in MSO training?
We've seen the increase quite a bit in the interest of it. The needle you have to thread is price that we're finding. Can you provide a useful capability for them for training at a, I'm not saying low cost, but at a reasonable cost? You know, from the U.S. side of the house, we're used to the, you know, the Department of Defense budget, which is huge compared to anything else in the world, right? So when you start talking to European nations, they don't have that budget. And so where there are capabilities out there, the cost at times is prohibitive for them to bring in some of those capabilities. So what we're finding is there is a lot of interest in it, but they also have to live in the realism of what their checkbooks can pay for. So we're having those discussions, starting to have some of those discussions with the folks now. I'll pause there.
Thanks, Andrew. And with that, Mags, I hand it over to you for the last word.
Yeah, just to touch on one comment on the kind of the European interest in EW. We went to EW Live back in September in Estonia with BSI, the makers of Mace. And what we found was the predominant question was what do you have in the way of ground EW? And so, and it speaks to, again, budgets and that, to get an airborne electronic warfare program can be cost prohibitive. But most of the nation's armies are certainly equipped with signals intelligence type capabilities. And so to that end, we recently completed a ground EW course as well, which in addition to some European partners asking for that, we've got some folks out at Crane and other places in the U.S. that are equally interested in that type of training. So we're trying to broaden, even though you're talking to two former EA6B guys, electronic warfare principles and the physics that go along with it are the same. So we're trying to capitalize on that. But just in closing, Ken, I'd say I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Mags and Andrew for taking time to join us here on From the Crow's Nest. Really, really appreciate your thoughts on the issue and hope you can join us throughout the week. And with that, I thank everyone for taking time to join us here on From the Crow's Nest this afternoon.
That will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you missed AOC Europe this year, don't worry. Look for it next year in 2024 in Oslo, Norway. Also, don't forget to review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners, so please take some time to let us know how we're doing. That's it for today. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at FTCNHost. Thanks for listening. Fast Labs, powered by BAE Systems, is at the forefront of advanced technology and defense research, development, and production. They're pushing boundaries, breaking barriers, and innovating for a safer world. Check them out at www.baesystems.com/fastlabs.